back to bed this morning, and as I'm pulling down the blinds, yeah, the sky was dull and hypothetical and falling.
Velvet Dinosaurs and their latest hit, Eating the Plate. Now let's go to the phones and hear what you have to say. Go ahead, caller, you're on the line.
Master Dirty Red Scum! Take him in the teeth, Red Hats!
Really?
Kill!
That's really
kill! Filthy bastard tummies! I hate him! I hate him!
Well,
Maybe you should relax a little bit. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Explains why mine sounds like a scream. Well, this is not
and fading out in the background there. That's a little bit of Bridal Party to kick off the program today. That track right there was Fruitless off of their recent album, Negative Space. Good stuff right there. And you are tuned into Intersections here on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory here at the beautiful University of British Columbia campus. My name is Mel Woods. I'm this year's Gender Empowerment Collective Coordinator, and I, along with a group of rad volunteers, help bring you this radio program every week from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. here on CITR, where we play great tunes and talk about great issues made by women and gender diverse folks here in Vancouver. We're local, we're current, and we're all sorts of fun things. And we have a great show for you today. We're going to be featuring some conversations kind of around music, I think is kind of the theme of the show, if you will. First up, we're going to be hearing a great interview that I did yesterday with Anna Rose Carrico, who is the executive director of the Redgate Review Stage. And we were talking a bit about consent and sexual assault here in the music community here in Vancouver back a couple months ago, as follow-up actually to a story that we covered on the program back in November surrounding kind of some call-outs on social media around sexual assault in venues. And what came out of that was a town hall that was held last week at Redgate talking about where do we go from here, how do we establish consent standards in our communities and all of that. So it's going to be pretty great. So we're going to listen to that one after the break. And then later in the program, great interview with Necking, great punk band. One of our volunteers, Hannah, had the chance to sit down with them for a big long chat, the full written up version of which you can read in this month's Discorder magazine. And I'll plug that probably again at the end of the program. But in the meantime, let's just keep the tunes a rock and rolling. And then we'll hop on back with that Anna Rose Carrico interview here on Intersections.
My name is Anna Rose Carrico, and I'm a director at Redgate Arts Society, and we're a not-for-profit organization whose primary mandate is to supply as affordable as possible studio space for artists, musicians of all disciplines, as well as provide space for them to showcase their talents. So we have like a gallery, multi-purpose concert movie screening space, and we have a theater on Granville Island. And lately we've also been holding space to keep the conversation around consent and accountability moving forward. We have been an official not-for-profit for, I think, around 5 years, maybe. Yeah, I think it's our fifth anniversary this month, actually. I think that this particular case is really interesting, just because it's not just happening in our little activist East Vancouver circles, but it's also happening on, like, a national and even international level with the Me Too movement. So essentially, the conversation started for us a bit earlier, like in the, let's say, last spring. I mean, we've always talked about it, but it began in earnest around last spring. And because this has always been an issue, right? This is just the first time people are actually talking about it. And then it sort of exploded in like the national news with Harvey Weinstein and the Me Too movement. And then it kind of became local again with the DJ list and the ramifications of that. There was a list compiled of fairly prominent local DJs who were accused of assault, essentially. There wasn't a lot of detail, and it was mostly circulated on Facebook. And then one of the DJs on that list took his own life. And I'm not certain that that's why that happened. Like, I don't think anyone can be totally sure, but it definitely, they're definitely intertwined in the public eye. And so it became very clear that as a community, we essentially, the tools that we have now are ostracism and calling out. And those are essentially like a first step, not an end. And so we need to figure out what those next steps are, because at this point we don't have any. I think that everyone is very much on, at least not the same page, really similar pages, as far as the need to move forward as a community with other concrete steps for rehabilitation where appropriate, or at least accountability, some kind of reporting process. One thing that I find really interesting, though, is that because this conversation is moving ahead so rapidly, it seems like a lot of people, myself included, are a little bit more reticent to make statements because we're all worried about getting caught in some quote or statement that in a few months will be, you know, at best irrelevant and at worst problematic. It's just an indicator of how quickly this conversation is moving. There's a lot of local groups. There's a lot of venues that are really interested in making this happen. Good Night Out is obviously the first one that comes to mind. We've done a lot of work with them, and they've done some amazing stuff around this. I mean, they're essentially taking on like Granville Street, which I can't even imagine the level of energy that you would need to have to do that. I mean, it's difficult enough for us to do it with our small community-based DIY venues. So I can't imagine what that must be like. It was very heartening in a lot of ways. We got PureNet to facilitate it, and they did a really amazing job. I think one of the reasons why it felt so much like everyone was on the same page is because they managed to frame the conversation really well, so we didn't have to spend the first half hour there arguing about why we were even there, which is what happens a lot at these community gatherings. It also made it really clear that there's so much more work to be done. So we were planning on doing a series of workshops, town halls, etc., and yeah, just made it so, so clear that that's gonna have to happen. It's gonna be a really long conversation. There was one of the things that a lot of people were interested in, which is something that we were kind of talking about beforehand, was the idea of, I don't know how to word it, but like a consent council, almost some kind of group of people that could have representatives from venues, but also just individuals who are interested in maintaining this, that aren't beholden to any specific groups, that could maybe receive information, process it, and then hold venues accountable to a certain set of standards that we hopefully all agree on beforehand. One thing that people were worried about is, and this has come up before, is the idea of problematic individuals that have a lot of social capital. So someone who is in a band, or they run a venue or a production company, they're victims not feeling comfortable coming forward because they feel like the community is going to stand behind their abuser. And so the idea of having a group that isn't specifically affiliated with any other group, if they receive that information, then they could say, you know, if they heard something about an employee at the Red Gate, people weren't comfortable about going to the Red Gate with that information, which I totally understand, then that group could approach the Red Gate. This is the things that we've heard. These are the areas that you could improve on, etc. There's a lot of reasons why victims don't want to go to the police, and I completely understand that. And essentially, by all means, people should go to the police if they feel comfortable with that. Obviously, we're not discouraging that. But our priority is to make sure that the people in our community feel safe in our community spaces. And the onus is really on venues to provide that, I think. I mean, it's obviously it's everybody's job. But we're the ones who are providing those spaces, and we have that framework. There's only so much that an individual can do, right? And I think with stuff like posting community agreements at the beginning of shows, that really like empowers the individual to step in if they see something that they don't agree with, for sure. And a lot, I find that there's a lot more sort of self-policing at events that do have community agreements because people are already thinking about it, right? I feel like the venues can do more after that consent has already been violated, though. I mean, and now we're trying to take it beyond that, whereas just as opposed to just banning people, hopefully after this winter we'll have some kind of process in place where, you know, we'll say we're banning you until you can complete this accountability process, which I, again, have very few ideas as to what that's actually going to look like. And so there was people from various community groups, event organizers, different venues, as well as just individuals who are interested in this, which I think is good. I think having a mix. And I would have liked us to be a bit more proactive in specifically inviting different venue and event organizers. I think that for the next one, now that we kind of understand the logistics, we thought about a lot of like logistic things that we kind of won't have to think about now that we've already had one. So we'll be able to focus our energy in being a bit more proactive in that sense. We need any kind of reporting process that's not just rumors, obviously. And we need this, we barely even touched on because it is, we had three agenda items and we essentially were just on the first one because each agenda item is really its own, at least 3-hour meeting, at least. And obviously everyone coming to these feels really strongly about this too. So, I feel like everyone left feeling like they had been heard, like listened to, and I think that was really important as well, just to show that there are aspects of the community that want to hear what everyone has to say. The movement has changed a lot in the past few months because initially it really did feel like it was coming from this justified rage, this place of anger. Yeah, it was coming from this place of anger, and I feel like that has dissipated pretty significantly in just a few months. Like, people are really looking at what do we do, like how do we fix this problem at this point. It's less about pointing fingers and more about conversation, which is remarkable considering how brief the like timeline has been. I think that the level of conversation, I don't think it's gotten, what's the opposite of fizzling out?
Grown.
I don't think it's blown up anymore, but I feel like there's definitely a really strong sense of momentum still. We had a survey online asking people what other workshops they thought should be offered to continue the conversation. So I think it's a combination. We have we got a lot of feedback about things that maybe don't make sense as a town hall, but would make sense as a standalone workshop. So I think it's a combination of workshops and town halls. The town halls are a lot to organize, so they'll probably be spread out a bit more, as well as I feel like a lot of the work that can be done in workshopping can then be brought to town halls too. I'm like a firm believer in delegating things to smaller groups and having them work out the first part. And then you bring, you know, a half-formed idea to a larger group. It's much easier to reach a conclusion that way. Mm-hmm. So for instance, yeah. And then we have other workshops that would just, I think, be helpful for individuals in the community. For instance, we really want to do one that my joke title is, when can I legally punch this person? Basically for like legal rights for victims or potential victims, right? Like how far do you have to let it go before it's assault, basically? I think a lot of people are basically wondering that at this point. And I think that's one of the reasons that a lot of people don't go to the police. It's because they're not even sure, right? Everyone who is willing to put any work into this should. And I don't... I think it would be better if it wasn't just Reggae. And it's not just Reggae. Other organizations are hosting their own workshops and stuff. So we just all need to communicate. Because, I mean, again, like, we want to make it really clear that this is not about the Reggae. This is about the community as a whole moving forward. Again, I think that we have to be a bit more proactive in reaching out. I think that a lot of groups that would have been interested in coming didn't come because they didn't know. And I mean, we've talked for years about how there needs to be like more archiving and more communication between groups. Like, there's a lot of issues that we've sort of bumbled our way through, and then we learn our lesson, etc., only to find out that another group dealt with it 5 years before. I don't think that's happening as much with this particular conversation, because I think it is pretty new for most of the country.
The world.
Yeah. But yeah, we've talked about how we need more communication between different arts and activist communities in mm-hmm. general. And again, if we had some kind of like central committee, that would help that. I think there is for the more established places, okay. right? There's less of that infrastructure when it comes to DIY spots. I think especially now, because everyone is exhausted, because it's really difficult to run a grassroots organization or venue in Vancouver right now, just because it's so expensive. Mm-hmm. As well as a lot of them don't last that long. Mm-hmm. For the same reasons. I mean, ideally, a year from now, we will have answered all of these questions somehow. And I think the only way to do it is to just talk about it so much. And especially to the point where none of us are made uncomfortable by it. Because it's real uncomfortable now. But if you just, you know, you keep pushing on, interesting things can happen. And so essentially, yeah, the questions that we want answered are what exactly is the responsibility of venues? Like, how far does that go? We need universal community standards that we can all agree to, like the community agreement, but a universal one. We need a reporting process, and we need some kind of accountability or rehabilitation process where appropriate. Obviously, it's not going to be for everyone. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's, if you ostracize someone from a community because they did something wrong, they're probably just going to go damage another community. We've noticed a significant difference at events where there are community standards posted and clearly communicated to everyone there. Because it does, not only does it just sort of put that in people's minds about being respectful, but it also empowers individuals to step in if they feel like something disrespectful is happening, basically. And that really allows those things to be stopped before they even start. In my many years of running events, it doesn't matter what you're trying to convey. If you have a sign that you can point at, like 90% more people will listen to you. Absolutely. We're making a commitment to these things.
Your daddy. know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
Thank you. The question and answer portion of the lecture with Professor Michel Foucault will now begin. You in the back there.
Hello, Professor Foucault. How might we begin to understand the nature of this thing that you call sexuality?
First and foremost, it is this. The nature of sexuality is to be found in the February 2018 issue of Discorder magazine.
This month's issue of Discorder magazine is themed around sexuality. Features include necking, Pace Society, Coconuts and Bananas, Dark Time Festival, Vancouver's Bathhouses, plus regular RLAs and under-reviews. The advertisers for the issue are UBC AMS, the Rio Theatre, Blueprint, Timber Concerts, the Cinematheque, the Rickshaw, Mint Records. There are over 100 distribution locations across Vancouver. Visit discorder.ca for more info.
And we are back here on Intersections on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory here at the beautiful University of British Columbia campus. We are the show of CITR's Gender Empowerment Collective. My name is Mel Woods, the Gender Empowerment Collective coordinator this year. And I, along with a great group of volunteers, produce this program every week. The track you just heard there before the ads, that was from Necking. That was Daddy Issues off of their album Meditation Tape. Before that, we heard my chat with Anna Rose Carrico, one of the directors of Red Gate, about some of the consent and sexual assault awareness initiatives that are in the works here in Vancouver's music scene. So stay tuned for more information on that as the weeks unfold. I look forward to seeing what those community standards look like. I think they're ultimately a good thing for sure. That last ad actually ties in really well with what you're going to be hearing next here on the program. One of our great volunteers, Hannah, had the chance to sit down with Necking, a great punk band, for a big long chat. You saw it published in this month's Discord if you want to go read about it. But if you want to listen to it, we've got it right here for you now. So this is Hannah with Necking here on Intersections.
Okay, my name is Hannah Toms, and I'm here with Necking in their practice space.
My name is Sonia. I play bass in Necking.
My name is Nada, and I play guitar.
I'm Hannah, and I sing.
My name is Melissa, and I play the drums.
So I've heard you as individuals are all relatively new to playing music. Could you tell me what it was that made you want to start playing music when you did?
Yeah, I think that I personally have always wanted to play the drums, and I got the opportunity to play with Sonia, Nada, and Hannah. And I think what happened was we just were in this place in our lives where we all felt really inspired, and we had the opportunity to actually have a space to practice in. And it kind of just started like that. We had a space to play in, and we wanted to make some music, so we just started playing together for fun.
I think that we've all agreed that this is something that we've always wanted to do. And then we talked, like the four of us talked about doing this for actual months, maybe like a solid 6 months of talking about like, yeah, we're going to do a band. And then one day, like, I don't remember why we did it, why we were like, we need to go now.
I used to like play around on guitar when I was younger, like in high school, and record stuff on like GarageBand. And I would always like fantasize about actually being able to do stuff with music. And eventually Melissa had introduced me to Hannah and Sonia, and yeah, like they just said, it's just like it was just the right place at the right time, and then we decided to like go forward and actually start a band. So yeah.
Yeah, I mean, similarly, I guess I was kind of like, I would play around and stuff, just kind of play around by myself sometimes, but I think I just had trouble like finding a community and finding people that are actually really, really loved to do stuff with. So I think it just kind of clicked in terms of like personality, in terms of friendships. Yeah. It clicked really well, so I think that's why it ultimately ended up being like this particular group of people doing it.
We've had lots of friends who've wanted to play music all the time, and then for some reason like the four of us, we really worked well together. Like I didn't even know Melissa or Nada very well, and I knew Sonia very well, and so I don't even know why, but I was like, these two girls, like I really want to play music with them, especially like above like other people that I have known for years.
You released your 5-track EP Meditation Tape in mid-November 2017. What made you choose the names Necking and Meditation Tape?
And Meditation Tape was so funny because we were there, like, we had like a little bit of just us having dinner. Sonia made us all spaghetti. It was really great. And then we were like, oh my God, we need to name this EP. And then I think you picked the name, Sonia.
No, I think Mel did, but it was like,
I
we had like
Hannah.
Two.
No,
you said,
it was
you
me.
Said,
it was me. I remember it was actually a Facebook message. We weren't eating dinner together. We were Facebook messaging and then we were like, hey, we're posting it in an hour. What are we going to call it? And we were just like writing stupid names. And then finally I was like, what about Meditation Tape? Because it's not even remotely a meditation tape. And then we're like, oh, that's actually kind of fun.
So Necking was kind of the same thing, like a sarcastic, kind of ironic name?
I think it's funny you should say that because now looking back on it, it's like, oh yeah, that works as a name. But at the time, we just thought it was like punchy and funny and cute.
Yeah. I think at that point we were just saying random verbs because it had been a month and we were like, I remember being at a practice space that we were at the time just being like, God, like, oh, just say something. Somebody was like, kissing, smooching, necking. We're like,
there
great.
We were talking about, like, make out point or something. Somebody had gone on to some sort of creepy 50s nostalgia, and we were like, I think the fact that that whole era is so racist and sexist anyway, that having a band that is, like, anti that, it'd be funny to, like, ooh, necking. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Something your parents say or older than your parents say.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Who would you say are your biggest musical influences when you're writing?
The Slits.
Yeah, I mean, there's some that are pretty much universal to us. You got The Slits, you got Kleenex, you got X-Ray Specs. I mean,
even like Slater Kinney.
Slater,
but Nana knows, Nana's like the punk music queen.
The punk
queen.
Music queen. I don't know, I am often very influenced by like The Wipers. Everything is escaping me. Kleenex. Delta 5, Nirvana, even like a lot.
Yeah, like there are like so many funny
so
things
much.
That we listen to.
I have gotten like multiple people have told me that we remind them of B-52s, which I think is lovely.
Which I've never.
Which is strange. I find that so weird. That. Yeah, I would expect more kind of interplay between vocals and with that kind of. Comparison. But
they have such a wonderful energy that it's a compliment.
Yeah,
awesome.
Totally. I love them. Yeah.
Well, and also on top of that, we all obviously have our own influences that we kind of bring in, which is great. I think, like,
totally different genres.
Totally different stuff. Yeah, like Nada, as you said, has like this incredible knowledge of punk history in general. And I think Mel is like the most on top of contemporary rock music in general of all of us.
I don't know if that's necessarily true, but I feel like when I think about influences or when I'm thinking about like writing songs or trying to figure something out on the drums, I think of bands that I really admire who are, pretty contemporary, like local bands or pretty fairly local, like Tough Age is a big one. Woolworm is incredible. Mm-hmm. I also think of like bands that you maybe wouldn't expect, like Jawbreaker. I'll hear a song and then think like, I really want to do that on the drums and then try to do it.
Mm-hmm. I think every day we're listening to new stuff and being inspired by new stuff. I like, this is like too cute, but I find myself just in here thinking like, I just want to sound like Nada and Sonia right now. Like, what are they really into? Like, what kind of songs do I want to write that they would love to play?
Aw, Hannah.
I heard from someone that you girls don't want to necessarily be like associated with Riot Girl or like labeled in that way.
Yeah, I mean, this is something we talk about a lot. Well, I've actually written like scathing papers about Riot Girl. I think Riot Girl is such an important and incredible movement that was so important to so many people.
In its time, 25 years ago, we can't be associated with something that's so outdated now.
The music is wonderful, but it's so incredibly political, and politics change, and lives change, and lived experiences change over the years, so I think it's important to keep in mind that it was a product of its time. As wonderful as it was, it came with certain things that we may not stand for now. And it's a flattering comparison oftentimes, but it's also, it may come off as a little short-sighted, maybe.
Yeah. I think that the word inclusive is a definition that has changed since then. I think that's really important to us, to not be associated with
that, like, type of inclusivity. Yeah. And also the fact that people see a band with four women playing punk music and they immediately assume Riot Grrrl, not knowing that it's a political movement. Yeah. That, you know, maybe if they heard some of the songs wouldn't as closely align with it as they think. Mm-hmm. It seems kind of like a cop-out to label an all-girl punk band as Riot Grrrl.
Yeah, like you don't know any other words for that. I don't know.
Yeah. Read a book. And there are many of them.
Read a book.
Are there any, like, particular messages or things that Riot Grrrl band stood for that you feel are particularly outdated now and that you don't want to be associated with?
I think that the trans community was seriously exiled during this time, and that's, like, kind of painful to think about and important to think about, that you need to be actively avoiding that, that you need to be actively including everyone.
There was also a degree of, like, sex workers who were excluded from Riot Grrrl, and not every single person who would call themselves Riot Grrrl agrees with that. I know that Kathleen Hanna was big into making sure that sex workers felt included and empowered by Riot Grrrl, but there were a lot of musicians who didn't want to include sex workers in that movement, and I think that that's something that is really important to us. We think about that a lot, so...
Of course, on top of that, as a band with women of color in it, Riot Grrrl was sometimes lacking in including people of color, women of color. I read some personal testimonies recently of people who were in the scene at the time who would, like, recall inclusivity-centered seminars that Riot Grrrls, I guess, held that would be all white and... communities of color would, like, cater to them and, like, serve as, like, help.
I think also with every movement, it's important to say that we wouldn't be here without Riot Grrrl. Yeah. So important. I don't want to sound like we're just, like, shitting all over it.
But like, not, of course not. Like we said, that was, like, 25 years ago. That was a long time ago. We understand that things are different now, but with that in mind, there's, you know, something else that we could be called, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, you've been getting a lot of attention recently. You've been having a lot of gigs, and you've been getting airplay, and you placed number two on Ride the Tempo's weekly top tens in
true?
November.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that did happen.
Yeah. With All Melissas Are Keepers.
Yeah.
So I was just wondering, like, how you guys feel about that and if you were expecting this, like, 6 months ago or so.
We talk about it all the time, how we think, like,
that?
Yeah.
I knew waiting. You were going to go there.
Oh,
God.
That's okay. A little beer was spilled, yeah. But that's okay.
We talk all the time about how we're waiting for, like, the set to fall, and we're, like, standing in the middle of a field, and all of Vancouver's, like, pointing and laughing.
Yeah, like, the film set. Like, just the walls to fall down, and, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay, I don't know if this is, like, such a weird reference, but you know in It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia when they convince Dee that she's become a famous comedian, and she hasn't? It's all fake. She'd never became a comedian. She thinks that she's about to go on, like, David Letterman or something like that, and then the set falls.
Yeah, I think that because I had never touched a drum stick until February of last year, so it's like, it's just wild. I mean, we all kind of came together, and it all was like this series of events that didn't really make sense but just happened, and now we're getting to do all these amazing things, and we're a part of this, like, super cool, super supportive community that's giving us a chance, and it's just amazing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm very surprised and very grateful, but at the same time, Vancouver, I mean, we've all been going to shows for a long time, and it is a very wonderful community, so honestly I'm surprised, but I'm also not, because of course the city and the people here would give us a chance. Like, it's, yeah, I'm not surprised.
Sonya's the most talented, though. Like, of course he's not supposed
to be. So good.
Are there any more thoughts on, like, acceptance or just inclusivity in Vancouver's music scene?
Needs more. Needs a lot of work.
Yeah, I think that we're doing a pretty good job of making spaces inclusive. So, you know, you see an event on Facebook and you'll see how it's accessible, and you'll see a land acknowledgement, and you'll see a lot of all ages spaces opening up. So things are becoming much more accessible to people in the city, which is super cool. Obviously, there's a lot of work to be done, as can be said about really any city, any community. There's a lot of work to be done, but people are aware of it, and it's cool just to be kind of a part of it at this time. It's done, like, over the past year even, like, so much growth and so much amazing stuff has been happening.
Are there any thoughts on, like, what growth is left to do? Like, what needs to change in order to become, like, completely inclusive in the music community here?
I think, for starters, a big one is just the fact that, like, abusers just are completely navigating the scene right now. No consequences whatsoever.
Really?
Not even just the scene, just, like, so many... Like, are we just talking about the music scene right now? Or just, like... Yeah. I think that's an issue no matter... what scene you're in. I think that there's more attention paid to it. I feel like in the scene that
we tend to hang out in for whatever like reason, but I might be wrong about that, I don't know, but I think that's something that's really important that needs more attention in all like areas of
it's like
life.
It's a weird thing playing at a venue that for the most part is like very accessible, very inclusive, you like support the venue, but then last week like they had a band who's one of the members is like a known abuser, like a known sex offender, like and absolutely everyone's defending them. Mm-hmm. And there you are in like the same space that is supporting you is also supporting them.
Yeah.
Or you'll be at a show and you'll hear like a couple hours later or like the next day, like, oh, such and such was there and they're a known abuser. And you're just like, the scene is doing the best or like we're doing the best that we can. But it's still terrifying to say like this person is here and I don't want them here. And so I think a lot of spaces are doing a great job of saying like, if you're feeling unsafe, like you know who to go to. But I don't know how to really structure it to make people feel safe enough to, and people shouldn't be expected to feel like they need to, you know, out people publicly, but I think that's still a thing that's happening a lot.
So do you girls think that the responsibility to stop sex offenders and assaulters from entering these spaces, would that responsibility fall in more like the management of the spaces or like the bands putting pressure on the management?
I think it has to be a community effort from like all levels, like from the people who go to the events to the people who organize them and the people who manage the spaces or like own the spaces, because it doesn't really work if, well, it does and it doesn't. Like, I feel like the best way to go about really abolishing that is to get everyone or as many people as you can on board, especially people in high positions, because that also trickles down to when you have someone higher up kind of making decisions, it automatically affects other people. And if it can be a positive change, then that's better. You know, that's great.
Yeah, and that's like, that kind of also sucks because it totally does need to be collaborative. But at the same time, like Mel said, putting the responsibility on anyone really is can be kind of tricky, right? Because nobody should feel responsible for that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you kind of have to be.
We don't like expect a venue to start screening every single person who's coming through the door, but it's just, you know, it's nice to see venues being made aware of situations and then acting accordingly.
I actually wanted to ask about Detective Olivia Benson. She's a character on Law & Order, right? Yeah. So what about that character inspired you to write a song about her?
I've never seen the show.
Yeah. Melissa's the only one who's seen it.
Yeah, I wrote that song and I was on a Law & Order kick. I was like watching like hours of it a day, but I was like, this is a dream universe where you'll take a cold case of a sexual assault that happened 6 years ago and then you'll actually find the person and charge them. Like, this is a thing that never happens. And so it's kind of this like alternate universe where people are actually being served justice for these assaults that happen, and it's something that doesn't actually really happen as much as it should. But I found it really inspiring to see something like that that is so widely received on TV.
Yeah, cops are good in this.
Cops are good and like helpful, and some are bad, but the good ones will prevail. Yeah. And it's very obviously a fantasy, but it's a nice one to think about.
Yeah. And it's Olivia Benson on the show who stands up for sexual assault survivors and like stands up for the women in those cases.
She is one of those people who I'm so moved. She's Mariska Hargitay in real life is also the same. I tweeted at her. She didn't respond. That's fine. Yeah, her whole character is like, believe survivors, like, do whatever you can to make them feel comfortable, do whatever you can to make them feel heard.
Change policy.
Yeah. Like, enact these things. She's fighting, like, male cops who refuse to, you know, do certain things because it's not what they believe in, or people who aren't believing survivors. Like, she's all about that, which we found really inspiring. And it's, as an idea, as a concept, it's obviously something that is so important.
We played with Fake Fruit, with Hannah D'Amato, and with Jess at the British Ex-Servicemen's Association. This was the week that Me Too kind of hit the internet. Mm-hmm. And I was singing that song, the end part of that song. I kept making eye contact with women. Like, it's the flat, you're on a flat, like, dance floor, basically. And I lost my voice screaming. I was screaming so loud. I was so mad.
Didn't you get, like, almost emotional? Didn't you say, like, you almost started crying at
one point? Yeah, I almost started crying, and I couldn't talk at the end. My voice, like, it's a singing part. It's singing, but I was just screaming it, and I couldn't even get the last kind of words out clearly. And the last part kind of cuts out a little bit because my voice gave out. We were just tearing it up, that show.
I love that part of the song, though.
Yeah, what I love about that song is that it starts out talking about an inspiring woman who is fake, yeah. But then it kind of kicks in and it's a very like painful and personal account of things. It kind of starts out kind of facetious and sweet as in an homage, and then it goes into a very like visceral place. Mm-hmm. And
all
a very personal
songs
place.
Are thinly veiled real things.
Thinly veiled.
From what I've like heard in the music community and read online, it seems that you're only really getting positive responses from people. I'm wondering if that's true, or if you've been met with any like negativity or criticism.
Oh well, yeah. I mean, obviously we have people who are incredibly like as supportive as we would want them to be. But honestly, I think we're small enough that we can enjoy the privilege of a nice community that is very supportive, and that's really cool. Yeah. I've read negative reviews of small local bands before, and no matter how accurate or reasonable they may be, it always feels kind of bad when people trash bands that are small and local and they're doing it for fun, because obviously criticism is always welcome, but it's like, I think it makes sense that people don't usually face a lot of backlash for the artistic like side of it.
I feel like also an easy thing to kind of jab at us for is the fact that we haven't been playing music for a long time, but I feel like our hearts are in the right place and we're constantly trying to get better. That's basically it. I think
if anyone came at me and was like, you're like, Hannah Karen is a bad singer, she is not a talented vocalist, I would be like, yeah, no shit. I can't believe you published that. I tweeted that. Like, we don't need this.
I think there's
like
a,
this doesn't hurt my feelings. Yeah. We know.
We're super self-aware of like limitations and we work within them and we try to push them, and I think that's cool.
I think that if someone came out and was like, this band is really problematic, I think that's when I would be like, no, that's the last thing that I want ever. And I also think all the time like about our lyrics and about what we're writing about and about if we're having like a political message, if that message, like back to the inclusivity thing, like if our thing is like cisgendered women point of view. And then I think like, okay, we have 6 songs, we haven't been doing this for long enough for me to feel like, you know, you need to judge people for having a platform and using their voice for garbage nonsense. But we don't have that yet, so I'm not especially worried about it at this moment.
Yeah, ask us later when we get like bad things said about us. I'll probably die.
I mean, it's probably gonna destroy me, and I'm probably gonna quit music. Yeah.
Yeah, and with the like wanting to have a social message is also a weird, almost like a moral dilemma. Like, you know, you don't necessarily always want to write songs with political messages. You might want to express something that's happened to you personally that doesn't pertain to like a wider social issue, and then it's like bigger name bands get criticized for not having social or political messages and not using their platform.
If I had a platform, I'd use it for good.
Wow.
Yeah, thanks. I don't know what we're going to do.
I think when we think of songwriting, sometimes we'll write a song that, I guess, on it, at its surface, it doesn't have a political message, but we're like, you know, if I was like standing in the crowd and I heard this song, I would feel so good about like my shitty breakup, or like I, you know, even something as small as that can be really important to a person. And so whenever we write songs, like some of them are silly and kind of funny, but then like there was a feeling behind it, and I think that a lot of them are kind of relatable in that way. So whether it's like a fully political message about assault, or it's like, I think my boyfriend cheated on me, like whatever it could be, it's something that is, it can be relatable, and the message can be big to someone.
I feel like we're aware of that too, and I think that when we write lyrics and write songs, we want it to be relatable. I feel like that's a big part of what makes a song a good song. If not like just instrumentally, it's like when the lyrics can be kind of interpreted in many different ways, like either as a joke, because like Melissa was saying, it's like on a surface level, sometimes it's just a jokey song, but then if you dig a little deeper, it could have a meaning to you. So
no one is dissecting our lyrics also. Yeah. So we're like,
well,
we
no, but I mean like,
it, like
I'm saying, like depending on the person, you might listen to Ford commercial and think commercialism right away. You might listen to it depending on like your state of mind and be like, oh, it's a funny joke. Like, it just depends on the person.
Okay, this is the last question. What are your goals for the future of the band?
I think our most immediate goal is to be in a Ford commercial. After that, we want to
play Sled, maybe.
Let's play Sled Island
this year. Like, the serious answer is we do want to play Sled Island this year. These are like shorter term goals. I think we want to record one album.
But our long term goals, we don't have any. We're just going to see
What's up? Yeah, we're going to see how happens. It goes. Yeah.
Okay, so I think that's it. Thank you very much to the members of Necking.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Member of CITR and Discorder, but are you a true friend?
Get a Friends of CITR and Discorder card for $20 for discounts on Main Street at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Biltmore Cabaret, Red Cat Records, Lucky Comics, The Wallflower Modern Diner, Neptune Records, The Rag Machine, The Regional Assembly of Text, and so many more.
Hey UBC students, love doing arts and crafts or just making things in general? We've got you covered. The AMS Print Club works to bring you crafts from different cultures, backgrounds, and decor styles. We aim to bring about cultural and environmental awareness through the arts and crafts. Check out our Facebook page, Print Arts and Crafts, or email us at printartscraftsclub@gmail.com for more details.
And we are back here on Intersections on CITR 101.9 FM. What you just heard there was Hannah's interview with Necking. It sounded like they had a ton of fun. And again, if you want to go read excerpts from that interview, check out this month's issue of Discorder. It's on the stands all across the city, online. Go read it. Go read about it. It's got a great cover this month, too. So 10 out of 10 would recommend. And yeah, with that, we're coming to the end of the program, Radioland. It has been swell. We will be back next week with another great show of intersectional feminist content for all of you. And I hope you have a great rest of your Tuesday. We're going to play you out with one more song from Necking. You just heard them talk. Now let's hear them sing. This track is called Stop Singing. It's from Necking. This show has been Intersections. The station is CITR. And this is you having a great rest of your Tuesday. Stay great, Radioland.
Stop writing songs about your dick. Her performance is shit. Why argue on sold out anyway? If you're just gonna complain all day. Stop writing songs about your car. Your grandfather's yacht that you sank in the Caribbean.
Stop singing about your ass.
Listen, radio is an important means of communicating.